Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
The Killer Bees!
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey! How we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Brendan behind the glass. It is a Monday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Hope you all had a great weekend. How was your weekend, Blankers? Have a good weekend?
Yeah, not bad. Yours?
It was good. Brendan, good weekend?
Busy, but good.
Brendan was hanging out with I don't know if I can say this on the air. Do you care if I say you were hanging out? I didn't think so. He was hanging out with a couple of colleagues. Care to guess?
Jake Asman.
Yeah. I would say Paul, but
no.
Paul's preoccupied.
Fun fact, I've never hung out with Paul.
You just have posters of him.
Exactly.
In your room.
Jake Asman.
Don't meet your heroes.
And Brad Kellner.
No. Close, though. He was hanging out with the Wheelhouse, minus Brad Kellner.
Andrew Carlson?
No, Cody.
Oh.
Is it okay?
And Andrew.
Oh, Andrew was there, too?
Ah.
Oh, man. Is it okay that Brendan's hanging out of hours, out of work, with the shows that aren't us?
Look, Zach Wilson. Yeah, I don't have any problem with it because we're both married. I mean,
me to hang out, I'm down. Just let me know when.
713-780-3776. Is it okay that Brendan spends his weekend with the Wheelhouse and not the Killer Bees?
The chances I will tell you guys no if you ask to hang out are very low.
I mean, if you're coming with us, we're going to, like, the grocery store. We're working on the garden.
Oh, never mind.
Golfing.
Never mind.
Golfing. Yeah, I don't know if he'd go golfing with us, because that means he'd have to be outside in the heat for an exorbitant amount of time.
You guys golf in July?
I haven't golfed
Did I? Let me tell you something. Before the married with kids part, when I actually golfed like 4 times a week, I can't tell you how many times that I would have friends, we'd called it being on scholarship, but I had buddies that were at golf courses, and they'd say, we'll give you a tee time, but it's like at 1 o'clock, but then you can play till dark. And we would play from 1 o'clock until dark, and the heat never bothered us. And now it's like, I can't imagine going out in the middle of the scorching 100-degree heat.
106 yesterday.
And playing 18 holes.
It was a record for the hottest day in Houston. It was 105, I think.
Yep, 105.
The car said 106 because, you know, it gets hard in the car. But my goodness, 105? Like, we are living in an oven. It's unbelievable. I haven't golfed in 11 months. I haven't golfed since last August.
I know that, are we on schedule now for when we're supposed to be having these days? Because but I'm just saying, in June and in late May, we had a couple where it was like, well, this is far too early for us to be going well over 90 degrees. And I don't know if now this is the dog days we're always supposed to have for the July fry, but it is. But here's the other thing. How about the weather people, all the weathermen that say, no, don't worry about it. We're going to have rain Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but it's going to be a scorcher till then. It's going to be dry as a bone. And then at 3 a.m, all I'm hearing is thunder and lightning and rain. I'm going, well, that was a little bit off in your predictions. This ain't Wednesday.
Yeah, there were some nasty storms yesterday. They're all around us, though. We didn't get a drop of rain. And I feel a little bit guilty asking for a drop of rain after there was some, like, thunderstorm damage in the general vicinity. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I would have liked a little bit of rain for the yard. Yeah, this is what you get if you want to hang out with us, Brendan, talking about our yard needing a little bit of water. You can come water our yard if you want to hang out with us. It's something that I do every day.
Inside requirements.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too hot to do all that. Not a great week for Yordan Alvarez. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, let's talk about the game yesterday.
Okay.
Astros, it was a rubber game of the 3-game series there in Oakland. The Astros winning it 6-1. Jake Odorizzi was pretty good. 7 shutout innings. Nice bounce back for Jake Odorizzi.
Look, for trade value, it absolutely was. I'm not going to change my stance. I don't care about not Santa and Patrick Creighton and everybody. Creighton's get-off-my-lawn guy that no one should say anything about Jake Odorizzi, and I meant everything that I said about a guy that puts himself and him before team, and that annoys me. He pitched well, yes, and I'll give him credit for that, and I hope it makes his trade value good again. But I think that overall, when you put it into context of, you got the worst hitting team at home in all of baseball, You've got a team that barely hits over 200 at home or overall. You got a team where you beat them consistently with fastballs that were not over 95 miles an hour, that were hovering around 92 or 93. He did his job. He got the job done. They got the win that they needed. But overall, does that mean that all of a sudden everything was warranted and justified for throwing him back into a rotation that was clicking on all cylinders and that he should be a mainstay in the rotation? Absolutely not.
What was the alternative, though? To not be in the rotation, like he'd go the two rehab assignments. He was you're going to the six man. Like what other choice did you really have, though?
I'm just saying, it was more. I understand he was coming back, but the fact that he tried to force the issue, the fact that he basically is like, I don't know, ask them. I'm ready. I've been healthy. Who knows when the team when literally Jeremy the pitching staff could not have been pitching any better. The five guys that they were relying on, and so as a good teammate, you should have just said, you know what, whenever they need me, I'll be ready. But instead to kind of say, you know, do it the way he's done it in the past, annoyed me.
Sure.
And then to force your way in only to have that first outing. And I get it, he was rusty. But again, I'd have sympathy for him if he just kind of waited his turn and played the cards out.
See, I agree completely with, like, his attitude and, like, speaking to the media. Because all of that was, I thought it was pretty Bush League,
I agree.
To be honest. But the Astros had to put him back on the roster.
Yeah.
Justin Verlander wants these extra days. He pitched on 7 days rest, and I think he's doing it again.
Does he want them, or did they convince him?
Well, he could have went 7 days rest, or he could have went 5 days rest, right? Like, he got pushed back 2 extra days, like, despite Odorizzi being there or not.
I don't think he pushed.
Well, he's doing it again.
I know, but I don't think he pushed. I think that's the organization pushing.
I don't know. It's weird to get a temperature on that. But, like, I felt like Odorizzi was going to be in the rotation regardless. Like, whenever he came back, and they even said from the start that he's going to make 2 rehab starts. He did 1 in Sugar Land, did 1 in Corpus Christi, and then he's going to be back with the big team. And that's what happened. You just had the drama of him handling the press conference or the little presser there kind of awkwardly. But overall, like, if you look at his body of work, he's made 9 starts this year. We've seen some Jake Overeasy when he's been pretty bad. And then we've seen Jake Odorizzi when he's been pretty good. Like, you put the whole body of work together, he's a sub-3.5 ERA guy.
Well, the key was me motivating Brendan to put something on Twitter before the game that actually got the results that we needed. I mean, again, don't sleep on that. But, no, look, I think that the people that have crapped on him and said he's had a horrible season leading up to this are the people that haven't watched enough Astros baseball. I think that we all know that he started the season just completely out of sync. But to be fair, as I'm trying to be, as much as he annoys me with the way he's handled everything, Urquidy also got off to a slow start and had issues and had to make some adjustments. So the fact that Jake did too, it should not get lost in the shuffle that pre-injury, his last several starts, he was stacking and racking some really quality outings.
It's fascinating what the Astros are going to do with their pitching staff. And Lance McCullers threw again on Friday, and like until he gets to a rehab assignment, I know that we're still looking at this, you know, mid-August target date, and you hope that he doesn't have any sort of injury. But watching Jake Odorizzi pitch against Oakland, you're right, like he did it against the A's, who are very bad offense and all of that stuff. But over the course of the entire season, he's been a good pitcher. Over the course of his career, he's been more good than he's been bad. Like, he's solid. He's a solid starter in Major League Baseball. I don't think there's any denying that. And he's the Astros' 6th starter right now. Like, he's behind Urquidy. He's behind Luis Garcia. He's behind, in my opinion, he should be behind Christian Javier right now, even though Javier, his last start, wasn't his best start. And it starts to get you to think about Lance McCullers a little bit. I'm not sure the Astros need Lance McCullers. They don't need Lance McCullers. The Astros right now have the 2nd-best record in all of baseball. They've beaten the New York Yankees. They've proven they can do that. I feel like with what they have, in terms of the starting rotation, and if they add some more stuff at the deadline, that they could beat the Yankees 4 out of 7. This Astros team does not need Lance McCullers. Now, if he pitches back to where he was pitching last year, that's outstanding. It boosts your odds. It gives you a better chance to win. But if Lance McCullers doesn't come back this season, I still think they're World Series capable of winning it all.
Well, and you've stuck with that since the beginning, and I give you credit for it. I just look at it and I say, look, you already know that I don't know why we're talking about him, because I have factored him out until he can prove to me unequivocally that he is going to be a factor and can stay there. And so the fact that it's almost like how many times we bring up Deshaun Watson's name, where we had to bring him up until he left town and then afterwards, subsequently. When I look at the McCullers situation, I don't need any more medical updates that he threw. I need rehab starts, and then I need to see progress, and I need to know that they have a plan for him. And if they're going to basically spell it out that he's not going to be in the pen, or there's a chance, and or he's going to start, and he's going to start getting some starts. And it doesn't have to be with the Astros big club. It can be with the Space Cowboys. It can be on an Odorizzi plan, but with more games. But you got to get him stretched out. you got to see the durability and the wear and tear on the arm and that the arm can take it. And then you got to see that he can throw the pitches that he was able to throw pre-injury to be somewhere close to the same kind of pitcher. Other than that, I can't worry about him. I need to worry about the club as it's currently constructed and what could be done to make it better between now and the playoffs. And there's still opportunities. So as good as they've been, if there's a chance to get better, and we're mentioning Jake Odorizzi. Look, again, my mindset is because at some point, you're right, we're going to go up to six, and then at some point we're probably going to go down to four for the playoffs. So when you look at that and all those things factored in, how many teams in Major League Baseball would love to have another above average starter that can have an ERA in the threes? You would think that Jake Odorizzi, if he gives you another start or two between now and the deadline, that you could get something for him that would mean a quality arm that you could add somewhere. And I'm not saying a starter, but an arm somewhere that could help you this year.
I don't think it's likely to trade Jake Odorizzi. I think it's very difficult. I think that the teams that would be looking to acquire Jake Odorizzi aren't going to be the teams that are trading a quality arm to get a Jake Odorizzi.
I think that you can get a relief. But here's the thing. Because he's cheap, because there's a chance that it's his choice for next season. But because he's cheap, and because so many teams need starting pitching, I think you could get a situational arm in your bullpen. You know, Dusty's been clamoring forever and a day for a lefty. But I think you could get a veteran relief pitcher for Jake Odorizzi between now and the deadline that could help you this season.
But if you're the team that's trading for Odorizzi, you're probably a contender, right? Like, you're probably in the race. You're looking for a starting pitcher
to
help
card.
You.
For like at least a wild card.
But if you're a team in playoff contention, a team that has wild card aspirations, why are you trading that left-handed piece to the bullpen?
You might have a surplus in the pen.
I just don't see a team out there that's like that.
See, the thing that worries me in a lot of ways is because I'm still watching Detroit. I think Detroit, because they're already in the crapper, and that's what, you know, that they normally have been and will be.
Yep.
That was for Brendan.
Yeah.
But just looking at the fact that they still are trying to completely, you know, flip the pancake, so to speak, turn it over and just do nothing but youth. And they've got a couple of veterans in their bullpen that could be serviceable for other teams. If in return, that's the problem. In return, right, they'd be looking for you.
Exactly.
Which is not what you're giving up, unless you try to construct like a three-way trade.
To me, it's like you're trading Odorizzi to a contender, and what you're getting in return is probably a prospect. And probably not even a very good prospect. And then you use that prospect, or you use other prospects. Like, if you trade for a second baseman, okay, now let's use one of our other second basemans to trade for a lefty. I don't think it would be like an Odorizzi for a situational arm. I think it'd be Odorizzi for a prospect. You boost up the minor league system just a little bit. I don't think you'd be boosting it a lot. And then you trade a piece for a lefty.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Situational piece.
As we've talked about, ideally it'd be an Abraham Toro situation. You have a surplus at one position. There's another team out there has a surplus at another. And it makes sense for both teams.
Seattle really wasn't in the race last year, though, right? Like, they wanted Toro because...
They were fighting for a playoff spot until they completely capsized. And a lot of people blame their general manager and the trade of Graveman.
That's kind of my point. I don't think the GM thought they were a contender. Like, I don't think the GM actually thought that they were in the race. And they knew that Graveman, because he didn't have another... Like, they didn't have Graveman under contract. He was going to be an expiring free agent. They liked Toro because he was a younger player, utility player, and he was under club control for a while. So it's weird. Like, to me, it's not going to be an Odorizzi for a situational arm. It'd have to be Odorizzi for a prospect, and then you're using one of your other prospects to trade for an arm. But do you think that the Astros need Lance McCullers? We think he's going to be back. We think he's going to effort to be back. We don't know in what capacity, what role. You said the other day you think he'll be back. You don't know what capacity.
I'm just not counting on him.
Yeah, and I think, like, I want to ask you a question on the other side, because since you're not counting on him, we'll ask the Hive this as well. Do you even need Lance McCullers? We all want him back. We think he could be back. Do you need him, though? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees, we're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Killer Bees, ESPN975, ESPN925.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about Doc Linville. Look, I can't say enough good things about Doc Linville and his staff and the way they do the NeoGraft procedure, and more so than anything, the results that you get. If you want your hair back, and some people have a baboon's butt that's just clamoring to show itself on the back of your head, and other people have a forehead that turned into an 8-head sometime along the way, and you don't know if you can ever turn back time, you think you're going to have to shave your head. You don't have to do that. The NeoGraft procedure takes care of everything for you, because it takes areas where you have a lot of hair, mainly the sides and the back, which genetically never go away, and it's taking a certain amount of follicles so that you don't lose any coverage area there. And it's moving them to where you either don't have any hair or you have limited hair and you're thinning. and it gives you an overall better coverage area, a better overall appearance, and more self-confidence in the process. It's a phenomenal procedure. And the thing that really got me is the 95%+ success rate of every follicle moved. Now, that means that 95%+ of all the follicles moved stay and grow and get thicker and stronger, and they're going to be there for the long haul. So therefore, you're not going to lose what they do in a shorter period of time. The process, it's basically a half a day. And you're back up on your feet and doing everything just the way you did it the last day, the next day. So it's very easy. You're going to see the full results in about 6 to 9 months. But boy, once you see those full results and you see the hair growing, it is absolutely exciting, and you're going to love every minute of it. As an ESPN listener, you're going to love this even more. You go to 975hair.com, and you are going to get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff that normally costs $150. And from there, you can ask all the questions. You can meet with the staff. You can find out about the procedure, that success rate I was talking about. Ask all the questions. They'll give you all the answers. See if it's right for you, too. It was right for me and John Granato and Jake Asman, and the list goes on. But, boy, I'll tell you what. You could be next in line, and you could reap the benefits just like we did. And he is the best at the NeoGraft procedure. 975hair.com. Go see my friend Doc Linville.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Do the Astros need Lance McCullers? 713-780-3776. So you've been on, I want you to say this, because I don't want to put words in your mouth. Right. I don't want to paraphrase. What are you expecting from Lance McCullers?
I'm not expecting anything. I have zero expectations. I've written him off. And I've said the reasons why. It's not because I don't want him back. It's not because I'm not pulling for him. It's not because I'm not, you know, happy with what he's done and the fact that he's still an Astro and he's locked up. It's because of the fact that the frustration I've had since he got injured in the first place was such that it was so painful to see him have to sit out the rest of the playoffs after he was clicking on all cylinders. The one thing that I said was whatever they're doing, and hopefully whatever they have to do, is done now so that this doesn't linger into next season. Now, not only did it go the entire offseason, but then you already kind of got an indication that this was going to get worse because he was blaming the lockout for the lack of the physical therapist he could work with, but nothing had been done medically to kind of put it behind us. Now, all of a sudden, it's not only going to bleed into the season, we don't even know when he's going to come back. Then it was like anybody's guess, you know, a month, 2 months, midway point, all-star break. Now we're talking middle to late August, best case scenario. And even still, if he comes back, there's no guarantees he's going to stay back. You don't know what Lance you're going to get. They're sitting there monitoring every breaking ball he throws. And again, no hatred towards Lance, but the situation, the way it was handled and how everything went down bothers me. And the fact that you're now going to take two key playoff runs and put them in limbo. One's already passed and there's nothing you can do about it. I think it cost you a World Series in a lot of ways. And then this year, you look at it and you say, look, if he could have been anywhere near we knew what we were getting and we knew what he was going to be for the majority of this season, it could dictate a ton from the trade deadline to how you set up your rotations to what you do with Odorizzi to all these other things that sit there and rest in the limbo and in the hands and the health and the arm of Lance McCullers.
It sounds to me that you don't expect much in terms of performance.
Because what I told you
is fine.
When he comes back, I also don't know how long he's going to stay back.
No, I think all those things are fair. And Lance McCullers is not like an Iron Man. He's not Cal Ripken. He's had tons of injury concerns over the course of his entire career. But do you think he'll pitch a game for the Houston Astros this year? So like you expect him back at some point.
Look,
right?
I think he has to. I think that you're so far up in the division, too, that you have... We've talked about the luxury that you have as opposed to just about any other team, with the exception of the Yankees. When you look at that and you say, okay, I can throw him out there three or four times, just the way you could throw Odorizzi out there as many times as you want or do whatever you need to do, checking out lineups and giving guys days off, because you are in a position that everybody would love to be in. So, I expect him to pitch again.
I think it's a separation of like the thoughts here. You have zero expectations in terms of him performing at any sort of level, but you do think he's going to pitch again for the Houston Astros, which I think is actually kind of helps this out. The Astros don't need Lance McCullers. Everything else is a bonus. Everything else is gravy. I think it does increase your odds depending on how good Lance McCullers is. But if Lance McCullers is a net zero for this team, whether he's pitching in two games, getting hurt again, whatever the case may be, this team is capable of winning and winning it all even without Lance McCullers. Now, their odds increase if they can get back a certain degree of Lance McCullers. If he comes back with the way that you defined it, that's basically not having Lance McCullers back. Now, if you get Lance McCullers, and this is a big if, from 2021 when he was mowing down the Chicago White Sox until he did whatever he did to his UCL, then that's when the chances for the Astros to go deeper and deeper and maybe win the World Series goes up. Now, what it's, to me, interesting about McCullers is, like, I think he has his full arsenal now. I think he's there. I think he needs to work on his conditioning, obviously. He needs to do the up-downs he's talked about. He needs to go out to a rehab assignment, and like you said, he has to work on his endurance and his conditioning. But I believe Lance McCullers' stuff is back. He's talked about, like, the fastball and it being 91, 93. He averaged, like, 94.5, 95 miles per hour last year, and he has said that he's not going to get back there until he's pitching in a game, and he has the adrenaline. He threw the curveballs, he threw the sliders, threw all the cutters, all of that. He said to the media that he declares himself healthy. So I think Lance McCullers, in terms of his arsenal, is back to what Lance McCullers' arsenal was. Where he needs to improve and what the Astros are doing here, and they're being uber careful with Lance McCullers because why wouldn't you with the lead that they have? There's no sense of urgency because of the staff that they have, and you have Jake Odorizzi going 7 shutout innings as your number 6 starter. He'd be 7 once Lance McCullers comes back. And now it's about extending him. Now it's about having him pitch multiple innings. Now it's about him sitting on the dugout for a simulated half inning and being able to go back out there. It's about making the rehab assignments and all of that. So we're going to see Lance McCullers back this season. Mm-hmm. The question now becomes at what production level for Lance McCullers. And honestly, I think your way is the way to handle it. Don't expect anything from Lance McCullers. You're good enough already without him. But he can't help you. He's got the potential to help you, but make sure you do right by McCullers in terms of not rushing him back or anything like that.
Here's the other thing to look at, Jeremy. I treat this worse than I treated the Urquidy situation, and I had a ton of reservations when he came back the second time with the same shoulder injury. The bigger problem for me in comparing the Urquidy situation and being having a lot of reservations and McCullers is, at least with Urquidy, you knew it was the same shoulder twice. Now you're coming off of Tommy John. Now you're going to the forearm. It was UCL and everything that goes with that. Those are two separate injuries. So now you can't even put it all into one basket and say, hey, the rehab was the same. They knew this going in that he could possibly have more issues with the same shoulder. This one, there was no medical procedures done. There was nothing surgically that either could have been done or should have been done, but they didn't do. And you're going, well, I don't know if this is still lingering effects from the Tommy John or if this is just overall nothing but the UCL. And is there something that you can do to fix it? Because you got him under contract long term. But as it states, the most important thing right now, even though you do know you treat him differently because he's under contract for multiple years, is what can he do this year to help this team? He already basically came out and said, I don't want to be in the bullpen.
Yeah.
That's a problem too, because if he could get guys out and be effective in short stints, you'd love to have him in your pen. Just because he's better than a lot of the guys that you have in there currently, if he doesn't want to do it, that's a big problem and a distraction.
It's going to be very difficult, like how they place Lance McCullers back into a certain role. I believe that he, like Odorizzi, wants to be a starter. You mentioned the liking tweets on stuff that we posted. Who was it? Was it from Keith Law? I think it was from Keith Law.
Yep.
Basically saying that, you know, Keith Law suggested that he should be used as a reliever. And then people responded to Keith Law, no way, he's a starter. And then Lance McCullers liked those tweets saying that he should be a starter. So Lance wants to be a starter. And also, like, even if you do use him out of the bullpen once he comes back, you should be grooming him as a starter until you get to that bridge of like, okay, Lance, there's just not a lot of room here. Because who are you bumping out right now? Like, Christian Javier always is the whipping boy, right? You always move him to the bullpen because he's, like, willing to do it. And he's good. I mean, he is good as a reliever. But he's been pitching so well as a starter, his last start notwithstanding, that you don't want to move him out of there. You're obviously not moving Fromber and Justin Verlander out of there. They're both all-stars. And now you have a conversation of, like, who's that number four? I think that's where Lance McCullers would fit in if he gets back to being 2021 Lance McCullers. But he's got to earn that, and he's got to produce in September or whenever he comes back. Like, in his last 6 or 7 starts, if he has a 5 ERA, I'm not giving him a start in the playoffs over Jose Urquidy or Luis Garcia. And if Jake Odorizzi still has a sub-3.5 ERA, I'm not even giving him a start over Odorizzi, as crazy as that sounds.
You got to have some tough conversations if you're James Click with a lot of these pitchers, because Odorizzi is another guy that doesn't want to go to the pen, didn't think he should have been in the pen in the first place, said he's never been in the pen his whole career, and then we know what we went through with his prep to get ready for games and then how long he was down after throwing in a game and how that didn't really benefit the Astros. You only have so many roster spots in the postseason, and you can only have so many prima donnas taking up spots that aren't living up to the billing of who they think they still are.
Are you calling Lance prima donna?
I'm taking Jake Odorizzi as the first prima donna. I think that I don't want Lance McCullers. It's one thing to be liking tweets to subliminally send a message. Yeah. But if he comes out publicly and kind of starts stomping and whining about anything that where they ask him to be a part of this team but in a different role, then I might look at him differently. I like Lance McCullers. I appreciate what he's done for this franchise. I just don't like how the whole situation has played out. I would love to think that he could be a part of this team. I'm just not going to count on him.
Yeah. See, there's enough playoff roster spots. Like, I mean, you're not keeping Martinez or Abreu over Lance McCullers, like, unless he's just completely brutal whenever he comes back. To me, it's the start. Like, what has he shown you to earn a start in the playoffs? That's what it's going to be a factor to me. What should be a factor whenever you talk to Click and Dusty, when you're starting to map out a playoff rotation, has Lance earned it? Like, what he's done in his career is not enough. He's got to show you things in 2022 that justifies him giving a start over Odorizzi, justify giving him a start over Garcia, Javier, et cetera, et cetera. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We probably buried the lead, if we're being completely honest with you. Yordan Alvarez is on the IL. That hand, again, is acting up. It's barking at him. I believe there are positives to Yordan being out a bit, though. Connect. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Yordan Alvarez is on the injured list. Dusty Baker saying that hand is barking at him again. Someone texted us saying, can you let us know how he hurt the hand? I remember there being a game in which he swung, and then all of a sudden he was, like, you know, writhing in pain. And then they sat him out for a couple days, and that was like the Sunday Night Baseball where Dusty told Buster Olney that it was not the hamate, which is something that could cost you 6 to 8 weeks. I don't really – like, that to me was probably the biggest indicator of when he hurt the hand. But the fact that it's still bothering him – like, he's still tearing the cover off the baseball, too. So, like – it hasn't really affected his performance. Like, obviously it isn't feeling good. The Astros are wanting to take care of it. But Yordan Alvarez on the injured list. How concerned are you about Yordan being on the IL? Probably through the All-Star break. That's what Dusty said.
Look, I think a couple ways, Jeremy, I'm concerned is because this is not going away. We've seen this happen before. It brought me flashbacks. Remember when Springer had the issue the one year where all of a sudden, randomly, with big swings, you would see him just completely break down after the swing, and you were like, oh,
was
God.
What was the injury with that? I can't remember. Was it the wrist or whatever?
I want to say it was either the hammock or it was something. Remember, because he switched to the axe handle back handle after that? But he had a real issue with it the rest of that season, and it lingered the rest of the year, though obviously he wasn't going to have surgery that would have taken him out of the lineup. You saw it this last weekend. Even though he was mashing, like you said, there were a couple times when you saw him cringe and you knew something wasn't right.
There was the at-bat where, like, he cringed, something wasn't right, and then he lined an RBI double in the left center field gap. So I was like, oh, he must be fine. But he's on the IL the next day.
You know that it's still, and again, this is the same reason why we say the things we're saying about McCullers and the ability to give guys off days off. They have a luxury most teams don't have. So if they can take this time right now and capitalize on the All-Star break as well, and kind of piggyback them so that he gets as much rest as he needs and tries to avoid surgery and gets close to getting this thing right, they got to do it. Look, they're playing the Angels. The Angels just got swept by the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah.
So they're not playing their best baseball. You'll take your chances in the fact that, you know what, you still got a double-digit lead in the division. And then going into the All-Star break, as sweet as we've talked about it would be that he'd be in the home run derby and he'd be in the All-Star game in L.A. in the Dodgers' faces to show you, hey, this is what you screwed up on. It's even better for him to sit at home and rest so that he's ready to go for you for the rest of the regular season in the playoffs. So as much as that would be great, the better thing would be to just have him healthy for the rest of the year.
Dusty said that they are hopeful that they get him back for the Yankee series. And usually the Astros, while they're coy about injuries, they're very vague about injuries. Usually when they say something, it usually turns into the truth. They mentioned earlier, Yordan, not the hammock. Jeremy Pena avoided serious injury. Jake Odorizzi didn't tear his Achilles. So usually whenever they're willing to give you information, it's usually right. It's just usually very rare and vague. Whenever they do give that information, my concern is just going to bother him all year. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't I guess it's not the hamate bone, right? Because you would be able to go in there, look at the x-ray, MRI, what have you, and you'd be able to notice a break. Dusty has already said that the hand injury has nothing to do with the hamate. They were worried that it was, but whenever they got in there and did the imaging, that it wasn't. My biggest fear is just that it's that it lingers all year. The good news is that it hasn't been a dip in his productivity at all. So I guess that's the good news. I do expect him back after the All-Star break. I just hope it doesn't, you know, linger all season long. I hope it doesn't flare up in August. Hope it doesn't flare up in September.
There's a portion of this fan base that's so enamored with him winning in the MVP this early in his career that they're saying this is going to hurt his chances.
It does.
It does, but who cares? Right?
Agreed.
I get it. I get it. You want all these individual accolades, but the biggest goal for this team right now is to win the World Series. And they're still right in the thick of things to do exactly that. So that's the line of thinking and the right line of thinking in how you handle and manage his health. And if it means handling it with his kid gloves and giving him some extra time off, so be it. Because of that big lead in the division and because you've basically solidified the number two spot, it would be ideal to catch the Yankees. And there's still a chance. But give him the rest he needs now so that he's ready to go later when you have to have him.
Yeah. See, I would even be willing to give him like 6 weeks off, if I'm being completely honest with you. Like, the most important thing is that Yordan Alvarez is with this team in September, and then once you go into the playoffs in October, if you need him 6 weeks to know that you're getting him back 100% before then, I'd be willing to do that. We just don't know the degree of the injury. We don't know. Like, if he's 100% back for the Yankee series and you don't expect him to re-aggravate the injury, then that's outstanding. If there is a procedure that you can do where he's out 6 weeks, but then you get him back, I'd be willing to do that. Because I do think that there are some positives with Yordan Alvarez being out. Like, the MVP, you can kiss that goodbye. Yep. And if it's 6 weeks. Like, if he misses a week here and then he's back 100% and he's clobbering the baseball everywhere, it's clobbering time, he can get back into that race. Like, it's only a week. It's not missing tons of games. But he can't have another stint on the injured list.
Skip just the division for a second, too. When you look at it from now until the end of the regular season, strength of schedule, the Astros have one of the weakest and easiest strengths of schedules for the rest of the regular season. That's another reason why you give him all the time that he needs. Because as much as the Mariners are quote-unquote surging, and that's gonna get your follows up on Twitter, I don't think that anybody is deeply concerned about that. And that's the ability for the Astros to say, unless it gets to five games or something like that, then we might have a different thought process. But that's why we're trying to attack this and address this now, because we're sitting so far up on the mountaintop that we could coast the rest of the way and we're going to be okay. So let's get this thing right. And let's also make sure it's not the same medical professionals that made the McCullers decision to sit on it and drag it out to where we are now that we talked about. Yeah. Let's make sure if there's something that has to be done, do it. And let's make sure it's behind us by the time they need him the most.
We don't know if anything could have helped McCullers, though. Like, speed that up. You know what I mean?
I don't know if there's surgery like Tommy John for the rotator that could have done something for Lance McCullers.
Well, it's his UCL.
But yeah, but it just seems like there's something that could have been done, whether it be major, minor, some kind of a medical adjustment that could have been made or done that might have been able to put this thing behind him.
Yeah, I don't know that about Lance, but as it pertains to Yordan, to me there are some positives with him being out, even if it's a week, even if it's 6 weeks. And you alluded to the big reason: you have such a big lead in the American League West, you're not worried about somebody else catching you in the AL West. I would be more concerned about one of the AL Central teams catching you for the number two spot in the AL. I'm not huge about getting the number one seed. If you get it, great. If you don't, whatever. I'm not going to put my player, like, I'm not playing my players every single day at the hope that I can catch the New York Yankees. I'm not going to beat myself up trying to get there. If I get there, great. If I don't, I'm perfectly happy with the two seed as well. But I do want to see this offense, and here are some of the positives that the Astros can take away from this. I want to see if this Astros offense can survive without Yordan Alvarez. Yordan Alvarez, you can make the case, is the best offensive player in all of Major League Baseball. You would think that an offense that is suddenly without the best offensive player in Major League Baseball is going to suffer, and they're going to suffer mightily, right? I think that this Astros team has enough pieces to where they can survive offensively. So I want to see if they can. I want to see if Kyle Tucker looks good. I want to see if Alex Bregman can continue to swing a better bat. Same thing with Yuli Gurriel. Can Jose Altuve, he's having a really good season, but can he step up a little bit as well? If this offense can survive and actually maybe thrive without Yordan Alvarez, I think it could help the team in the long run. Another angle to look at this, with Yordan being out, and this is probably more if it's more than a week, like the Astros are saying. This is probably more if it's more of like 4 weeks, 6 weeks. I think they would be more tempted to make a trade because Yordan's on the IL. Currently, Michael Brantley's on the IL. So you're looking at a lot of starts right now where you're either floating the DH around. You're looking at a lot of Chaz McCormick in left. Siri's probably going to get some run a little bit as well. I think that they're more prone to make a trade now that both Yordan and Brantley are on the IL. Even if they're not long-term serious injuries, they're like, oh no, let's look at a roster right now. If we don't have Yordan, we don't have Brantley. I think it could make them a little bit more aggressive on the trade market, bringing in a bat, even if it's not to replace like a Yuli. If it's just that insurance in case you have somebody hurt or if Yuli continues to struggle.
And I don't disagree because when you see the lineup, when the lineup card comes out, a lot of times you're like, who's the DH? Dubon? You know, or even Aledmys Diaz, who's been all over the place and is your super utility, and he can hit the baseball. But you're looking, because you're so spoiled with what Yordan brings when he's in the DH spot, and like you said, and Brantley's a 300 hitter. So when you lose two hitters of that magnitude that both hit for average and one hits for extreme pop, and you take them out of your lineup and you replace them with guys that can't, and nor should they be expected to be at the same level, but at least be somewhat serviceable to that, give you some pop, do some things that they're not going to do, then it behooves you to kind of already start getting ahead of the market before there's too much competition and seeing who's out there. Now, the problem that I have that I noticed yesterday, and it was emphasized last night during Sunday Night Baseball, the guy that you want that I am on board with now that I want to is playing for a team that suddenly has caught fire, is red hot, and is almost at 500 and has a chance to make the playoffs. If that's the case, the Orioles aren't trading anybody, let alone Trey Mancini. And that could change everything for the entire market for teams searching for bats. Because Benintendi's going to go. But Mancini was going to be a guy that you could say, well, if everybody goes after him, you could go after a Mancini and maybe catch the backside of it where you don't have to give up as much. And because of where his contract's at, you can get him for a lot cheaper and he could still be a big help. If the Orioles stay in this thing, there's a chance that they're not going to sell.
I tend to disagree.
Okay.
I tend to disagree because I believe Mike Elias isn't going to put the future of this organization at risk because of one hot run right now. Because Trey Mancini is going to be a free agent if he wants to, or if Baltimore wants to, at the end of the season because he has a mutual option. Mike Elias, who was the right-hand man of Jeff Luhnow forever with the Astros, I don't believe he's going to let Trey Mancini potentially walk and get nothing in return for him. So maybe the next 3 to 4 weeks matter. Well, I shouldn't say 4 weeks. 4 weeks put you past the deadline. Mm-hmm. They might monitor the next 3 weeks to see how big of a contender that they are. But I don't think Mike Elias is going to blow up the future and let Mancini potentially walk for free if he can get something for him.
It's kind of like our Texans discussion, right? It's like if the Orioles suddenly, because the Orioles got a hot streak, do you completely put on hold your rebuild and all the things you've been doing that's starting to show the, you know, your work has shown come to fruition and you're seeing the results? Do you table that because you got a chance to make the playoffs for 1 year? Or do you stick to the program, stick to the plan, and do what needs to be done to continue to stay on that progression regardless? And I think that that's a fair point.
It reminds me of Seattle's situation last year where they were like kind of in the race, but no one really took them seriously, and they traded Graveman, which ticked off the clubhouse, but was probably in the better interest of them because Graveman wasn't going to get them to the playoffs. They got a player with club control, Toro, who they like and they use. I still think Mancini is going to be attainable. But if they continue this hot stretch for another 2 weeks and suddenly they're in the playoffs, it could change that. It does throw a wrinkle that we didn't expect a wrinkle to be there. We thought he would definitely be traded. Now it's a little bit more questionable. 713-780-ESPN. I want to ask you this question, Houston. Yordan to the IL makes you feel blank. You fill in the blank. 713-780-ESPN. Yordan to the IL makes you feel 713-780-3776. Also, Jabari Smith has played 2 games as a Rocket. What we think. It's Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Yordan Alvarez to the IL makes you feel what? What does it make you feel, Blankers?
Concerned. Just because of the fact that there's still the unknown. Like, you're doing the right thing for right now, but it hasn't been completely spelled out that you're going to be okay in the long haul. And it's just like we talked about a week ago when we were talking about the reasons why you don't play him in the outfield unless you absolutely have to, and even still you don't do it, because he's too big of a piece offensively to lose. You can do what you're doing now, but tell me that it's not going to affect the team and his health status later, and you can't. And that's what really concerns me, because as good as this team's been all year, as much as we think that it's shown even more so than even we had doubts at certain points during the year, that it's a World Series contender, the one thing that can throw a monkey wrench in the whole thing is if he's not right and or he can't go. And so I'm concerned.
The most damaging thing that could happen to this team is if Jordan does not play in the postseason. I would even throw, like, that's a kind of a great question. Like, which one is more damaging, Verlander or Jordan Alvarez? If you can't have one in the playoffs, which of the two hurts your chances the most? I would say Jordan.
Yeah,
like,
for
the,
sure.
The pitching staff has been really, right. really good
and
outside of Verlander.
You've got options.
Yeah.
You don't have an option to replace a 300-hitting power hitter that was putting up franchise record-setting type numbers early in the season to this point in the season past the halfway mark. You don't just go out and find another one of those and replace him just like that, like the luxury you have with six and potentially seven yeah. starting pitchers.
Yeah, and you also have, again, we're not expecting Lance McCullers to have tremendous production, but that is a wild card in the factor. Like, you don't have some all-star level left fielder bat that is coming off of injury that you are hopeful and maybe wishful that can produce at a very high level, which the Astros have that in the pitching staff, even if you're not expecting it. They do have that wild card there. 713-780-3776. The Rockets played another summer league game over the weekend. They played Chet Holmgren in Oklahoma City, which was awesome. They were seeing Jabari go up against Banchero in game one with the Magic. It's awesome we see him go up against Chet in game two. We've seen two games of Jabari. He's playing another one tonight against the Spurs. What have been some early thoughts after a couple of games with the Rockets rookie?
Look, I have some more concerns than most simply because when I look at Jabari, you and I both were in agreement he was the most talented player in this draft. But I thought that he was a little bit more polished than he has been, yep. right? I think that he's almost been, there's one thing to say he was passive, that he just, you know, because he's made all the quotes that kind of went right along with, I just want to blend in with the team. And I also said that I was disappointed that the coaching staff didn't actually specifically drop plays in summer league to kind of get him some looks and get him to get some shots up to where he instead forced shots that aren't normally what he does. But I think when you look at it, you see how poorly he shot the ball against Oklahoma City. There were positives and there were negatives, but the one for overall takeaway that I got was he's still raw with a lot of work to do. Like, I believe he's feeling more comfortable with every game. I believe the offense will come because, look, that shot is not broken. That shot looks smooth, and I think that he will make shots eventually. But I think that there's more work than I initially thought that he to do for him to get him to where he could contribute on this team consistently.
Yeah, see, I agree with you that he's still raw offensively. He's not. I thought he was a little more polished offensively as well. Now, I actually was encouraged by his second game versus his first game. Like, he was looking for his shot more, was looking a little bit more aggressive, and I actually liked the shots that he took. He just didn't make them. But I'm not
concerned.
Yeah,
they weren't forced. I mean, he got looks. He just didn't make them.
And I'm not worried about Jabari's shooting ability. Like,
no.
That's not something that I'm worried about. He's going to make those shots most of the time, and as he gets used to the speed of the game and getting to his spots, things like that, that's going to improve. He lacks a lot of scoring ability. Like, he can shoot, but his scoring ability is not there. Like, attacking the rim, finishing around the rim, blowing by defenders.
Oh, we saw it in practice, but it's a different animal when you're playing against someone in a different uniform.
And his handles aren't where I would want him to be yet either. Now, he's 19 years old. Let's keep that in mind. He's 19-year-old with a lot of potential that he loves the gym. He's a gym rat. Mm-hmm. So I expect him to be able to get there. I think he's just going to improve his handles. I think he's going to improve his scoring. I think he's going to figure out to being able to, you know, getting to the elbow and rising and fire. I feel like he's going to get a little post move. Like we saw with Chet against the Rockets where he got inside, made a little move, left-hand hook, like from 5 feet. Like Jabari needs to add those elements to the game that he does not have, whereas a Chet Holmgren does, whereas Paolo Banchero does. Now, I do believe that Jabari's offensive upside is still as good as those guys, but he is more raw on the offensive side.
This is what the Summer League is truly all about, right? This is why we have the Summer League. As much as everybody thinks, well, this is going to show you who's going to be contributors on the NBA level next year. No, it's not. But this is exactly why it's right after the draft. Get your draft picks, their feet wet, as soon as possible against other grown men and other draft picks trying to make a name for themselves. Because this is the level of competition you need to be on right now while you make the adjustment to the professional game about getting paid and managing your finances mm-hmm. and understanding the travel and the grind and the shoot-arounds and all that stuff. Now, on a positive side, I loved his defense. I loved the fact that he showed he can guard big, he can guard small, he can block shots, he can rebound. But more so than anything else, the fact that he can stay with smaller guys on the perimeter when they drive to the basket was impressive to me.
his defensive game's already there. Like, he's already a good NBA defender with a chance to be elite NBA defender. His rebounding is something that I wish he would have a little more aggression with. But we saw it better in Game 2 and Game 1. And look, we're nitpicking a rookie to death, and we're critiquing a rookie to death. He's raw offensively, but he has the upside to improve. And I love how much of a professional he is at 19 years old. Like, listen, he's 19 years old. You listen to the guy, it's like he's been in the league for 7 years. Mm-hmm. So I like that aspect about him as well.
Here's the biggest thing to me is the way he can – his hip turn. The fact that he can change directions and he can go from, you know, just flashing out on the perimeter to taking a full change of direction and then kind of sliding to stick with a smaller guy when they penetrate. I took some heat from some people early on in the draft process when I said he was an above average defender. And they're like, what do you know? And that's crazy. And what games are you watching? Just watch him and isolate on him on the defensive end.
You're talking about
end.
Jabari?
Yeah.
You took heat for which way?
The fact that I said he could defend.
That
a lot of people
really?
thought that he was gifted offense. Oh, they were tweeting and texting saying, you don't know what you're talking about. He can't defend. And I'm that's like, weird. Here's the thing. Chet's a different story because we don't know how he's going to fill out.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, and then how putting on weight and filling out will affect his overall athleticism and his ability to have agility. I think from Jabari's standpoint, because people forget how tall he is.
Yep.
The fact that he's athletic and smooth and he can do this change of directions and do the things he's doing. I'm not worried at all about his defense.
No, his defense, I'm fine. I agree. Like, to me, it's all about adding the scoring ability to his game and polishing his skills. He has a long way to go in terms of polishing his skills with his size, with his scoring ability. But he's got the shot, he's got the size, and he has the athleticism. I think he'll get there.
Here's what I'll worry about on defense, though. Just learning systems.
Sure.
Right? Switches, rotations. Every team is different, right? But a lot of them, when they run defensive actions, it's all reacting to what the ball and movement does on the offensive end. But you have got to cover the backside. You have got to help the helper. You've got to do things that, depending on what college system you played in, it's going to be an adjustment for him. And I think that the Rockets didn't play a whole hell of a lot of defense last year.
And that's usually coaching, too.
For sure.
It's the coaching and telling the players where they need to be. And a lot of times it takes a long time to understand the defensive system. You know, you look at U of H that has the best college basketball defensive system that's in the country. It takes a while to get used to the calls, to the rotations, when you're helping, when you're not helping. So that kind of comes with time. Tari Eason, to me, though, like, if we switch the conversation, Tari, like, again, just two games and having really hot takes after two games for a rookie, Tari Eason reminds me a lot of Lance Stephenson, if I'm being completely honest with you. Like, he is long. He can D up a dude. He's
but
already
he's
very good at the rotations.
The
we'll see.
Okay.
But it seems like he is. He can get to the rim, finish at the rim. Like, he needs to be a little bit more consistent long-term with his three-point shot. But I love that guy.
I love everything he's brought to the table so far. I love the fact that so many people haven't even noticed him yet because they're so focused on Jabari versus Chet and Jabari versus Paolo. And they're all worried about the other guys in action.
Mm-hmm.
I love both of the other first-round picks. I love Ty Washington and what he's shown so far, his versatility-wise. He can make shots.
Yeah.
Now, you're not going to need him right away. He's an insurance policy right now.
He's a project.
But I love the fact that the project that comes to with a skill set that allows you to do whatever you want because of his versatility and his talent, that's great. But from an Eason perspective, I told you coming in, this is Garuba with offense. This is what they wanted Garuba to be. But I don't even think anybody could have dreamed that not only are you going to get way more offense than Garuba, but you're also going to get a guy that rebounds, blocks shots, has a ticker to where he is fighting for every loose ball and playing everyone like he wants to basically get in their kitchen and shut them down. Now, the comparison, I don't mind Lance Stephenson from you, and also because of your basketball
pedigree.
No, he's
taller, a little longer.
Some Yahoo on Twitter said he's Kawhi Leonard. Okay, let's pad the brakes a little bit, okay? Kawhi is extra special.
Yeah, he can score, too.
Offensively and also physically. But Tari Eason is a guy that I think that a lot of people slept on that could be a valuable guy in the rotation this year.
There's some talks that he might be better than Jae'Sean Tate as your three.
This
right
is
now.
Why, though. This is why, though, Tate is expendable and will be, because Tate's also, as you've pointed out, older than the rest of this group.
Mm-hmm.
And if he could be your Jae'Sean Tate, whenever he could be your next Jae'Sean Tate, there's competitive championship caliber teams that would love Jae'Sean Tate, and they will give you something for him.
Yeah, I like Eason. Ty to me, way too early to call it. He just doesn't look like an NBA player to me. Like,
really?
Yeah, he doesn't have NBA size, doesn't have NBA athleticism.
See, I disagree. I think that he can handle it. And it's one thing to say that he can hit a knockdown three. Some of the teardrops, the runner over Chet, when they really needed it in crunch time the other night, with the very, very high arcing touch shot, that just a lot of guys, they just don't have the skill set and the touch to be able to pull off. And he's pulled off a lot of shots around the basket that have impressed me in terms of knowing what spin to put on it, English, how to finish. I think he's only going to get better, and I think it's a blessing that he doesn't have to play right from the jump like a lot of number one picks.
That will help him.
He can play behind some guys. He can get extra coaching. And I think over time you're going to find out, especially because he's a young kid, that he just – Stone said it during the game the other night too. He just loves the game.
Yeah, has know-how, all that.
Yeah, and I think that that's going to show in a couple of years.
I'm not huge on Knicks either.
I've never been high on Knicks. Knicks looks like he's three meals over the limit. And he's not in the bonus yet. He just, to me, as a point guard, like he looks like a guy that is a power. He looks like a point guard stuck in a small power forward's body.
Yeah.
I guess they're high on him, especially now that you have Ty Washington. I don't know where they have room or a place for him. And I don't think that what he's shown, it's one thing. He's been great in the G League. Great. Well, some guys are all world in the G League and can never find a way to be a good player in the NBA. He, to me, is one of those guys.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. The NFL training camp right around the corner. If we look around the league, who do we expect will take a step back in 2022? It's Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of Employee Benefits is a...
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money.